done.
Thank you. Maybe the whole theme is dangerous.
One of the primary goals of Ilchus Brachos is to instill in us the notion of Hakar Satov, of feeling grateful, to expressing our gratitude towards the Kaddish Baruch Hu for all the beautiful, wonderful things that he bestows upon us. We just take a quick look around the table. We see from pretzels to apples to sushi and chocolate and everything in between. So we have a beautiful Baruch Hashem, a beautiful, beautiful world. And it's very important for us to understand that and to appreciate that. But before we can even begin a Shir Ilchus Brachos, just as when we speak about Hakaras HaTov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it's always predicated by Hakaras HaTov to Basav Adam, that we say thank you to those around us, we say thank you to the people around us, the people who make life so beautiful and wonderful. So it's really an opportunity just to stop for a moment and say thank you for everybody who's helping the growth of Torah within our own community and beyond. So first, a special Hakaras HaTov and a thank you to, I think it's called Torah in Tinek. I was asking, is it Torah in Tinek, is it Torah and Tinek? I see it's Torah and Tinek. I guess it's somewhere in the middle, okay? Which, a very, very special thank you to Amira and to Talia and to the extended Bardesh family. We go back for quite some time, way before any of you know, but we know we go back a long time. So we thank you for opening up your home for to be what we call in Achsanoi Shatorah, to be a host for Torah. That's a beautiful, wonderful thing. A special thank you to Becky and Jessica and Seth, Seth Grossman and Becky and Jessica, used to be Grossmans, of the extended Grossman family, as a very, very special opportunity to be able to dedicate the night shiur. Le'ilui Nishmas, Reb David Ben Menachem Manesh, somebody who I knew very well over the course, over the years. I knew him really through his children, through all the Masim Tovim, and all the beautiful, wonderful Torah that he has spread, both B'chayav in his life, and even over the last two years already, I've had the opportunity to participate in other Raskaras and other Yurtzeit Shurim in his memory. So hopefully this year should be Ilui Nishmaso as well. Two very close to home thank yous, and then at that point we'll start going into the real mainstay of the shiur. A special thank you to Efrat for being the force and the idea behind the shiur, because we have been discussing the shiur for the last approximately 24 years, how I was supposed to give a little bit of a review session. It was supposed to be a private one-on-one. So I'm giving Efrat a shiur, and everyone else is happy to listen. Like the Bali Musa used to say that, when you give Musa, so you're not really giving Musa to anybody else. You're talking to yourself. If there are 500 people listening, so great, that's wonderful. So me and Efrat are having this date out tonight. We're having a private, we're having sushi on our date. And everyone else is more than happy to join us. And a special thank you to my trusted secretary, Blima, who has put together took this shiur out of a whole bunch of emails that have been flying all over the place and actually put it into a very, very organized, coordinated, very up-to-date, high-scale, high-tech piece of paper with everything as we mapped it out in the car over the last couple of days. So we'll try to touch on many, many of the topics that people were asking about. The bulk of the shiur will be about specific questions that were sent us in the last couple of days, and I'll try to add one or two things that I think are important to be aware of as well. So without further ado, let's start to learn a little bit of Ilchus Brachos. And probably the first thing that catches our attention when it comes to Brachos is almost the detail that Brachos is all about. We're going to see there are some very, very real intricate laws that govern Ilchus Brachos. What bracha you make on something, and what if you stop in the middle, and what if you walk out of the room, and you have a mincha, and you have salads, and you got sushis, and you got all that. Isn't it so much easier just to say thank you, Hashem? I mean, everything's great. It's wonderful. All the food in general is really great, and thank you for this world. So think to yourself what a thank you means when somebody says thank you to you kind of in general and says, gee, thanks for having us. Or is it, well, thank you, the chillin was delicious, or that kugel was really out of the world, and they highlight each individual thing that you did for them, not just food, in all areas. It means so much more. It means it shows the person really cares. It shows the person is really, really appreciating what you did for them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need our appreciation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need our thank yous. We need it. We have to be able to inculcate in ourselves the ability to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a mature manner, in a sophisticated manner, in a way that's meaningful. And part of that meeting of expressing a thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wow, you didn't just give us a world. You gave us a world with so many different beautiful, wonderful components to it. And we can thank you in so many different ways. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we take bracha seriously. And we're not on the run. And we're not in the, doing 15 other things. we stop and we say thank you in an appropriate manner. So the halachas of brachas are very much geared towards this notion of creating the proper spirit, the proper mood for kerset tov. Let's begin with some of the, in a sense, intricacies of halachas brachas. So we'll start really almost with the beginning, some of the basic things to be familiar with when a person is making a bracha. Probably the most basic, elementary thing to say, which sometimes you may not even think of, is that in order to recite a bracha properly, you heard it, you have to recite the bracha properly, right? You have to say the words of the bracha. Now, sometimes there's this general kind of feel out there of, it kind of starts with something like a baruch adonai, a couple of mumbles in the middle, and min ha'aretz, and kind of at the end. And some of the words got swallowed up in the middle. So, the halacha is quite clear that if a person doesn't enunciate the words, so that's not really saying a bracha. I mean, whatever came out as a mumble is a mumble. Whatever came out as a word is a word. So one is supposed to say the words of the bracha. Doesn't mean you have to shout it from the rooftops, but it preferably should be said loud enough that you yourself could hear it. But it has to be, and it has to be said, those words. Every once in a while, you find yourself in a strange situation where somebody's reciting a bracha very often on your behalf, and you just didn't hear the words. Why didn't you hear the words? Because, let's say, for example, you're in a camp setting, and there are 500 kids screaming and jumping on tables and screaming, and somebody's trying to make kiddush, and you heard every word except for the first one, baruch. So you didn't hear a bracha. I mean, you heard something that sounded like, atosh, that's nice, but that's not a bracha. So one has to be careful to say every word, and one is hearing a bracha from somebody else, to listen to every word, in order to fulfill the bracha properly. Therefore, the corollary in the sense of that is that not only must one recite the brachas properly, one is supposed to be focusing and thinking what the bracha means, particularly when one gets to Hashem's name. So one is supposed to have an understanding, a cognizance of what the words mean. Brach Hashem, Hashem is the Adon HaKol, because Brach is the Lord and the creator of everything, Elokeinu, the powerful all being. So one is supposed to, again, I'm not saying every bracha has to be like your last words of Ne'ilah and Yom Kippur, but bracha should have that little bare bone minimum concentration of what a person, not only saying the words, what a person is actually focusing on what the words mean. And it's for this reason that it is important that a person not be involved in all other kind of activities when one is reciting a bracha. This goes beyond the scope of just the brachas on food. This is true for brachas coming out of the bathroom, brachas one says in the morning, brachas in all other contexts, that all brachas should be recited when one is in place, stationary. If one is on the move, one is is in the middle of making a phone call, one is in the middle of doing X, Y, and Z and walking around, so that's not really the right way to make a bracha. Sometimes one is stuck. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Let's say, for example, a person's stuck in traffic and then they're driving and they have to bench and they're afraid they're not going to be off the bench. They're going to forget. So then there are certain extenuating circumstances. But by and large, the starting point is that one is supposed to be fairly focusing both mentally, verbally, and physically on the recitation of the bracha. Sometimes we have an issue that comes up in Hilchos Brachos, a very common scenario. A person makes the wrong bracha on food. So here they came to the bracha shir and they thought now they got it all down pat, and then by mistake they made the wrong bracha. So as a general rule is, if one recites the wrong bracha, it depends just how wrong the bracha was. Namely, it depends on was it a bracha that was in effect a not true statement. So say, for example, a person is eating a carrot, and by mistake they recited Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. So that's a big problem, because a carrot is not Motzi, not Lechem, it's Min Haaretz, but it's not Motzi Lechem Min Haaretz. So that's, in a sense, a sheker. That's, in effect, a not true statement. So a bracha that was said that is not a true statement would have to be repeated. One would not fulfill the bracha, even b'di'evid, one would have to repeat the bracha again. However, if a person made a statement in Hilchos Brachos that is a true statement, it wasn't the correct bracha to recite, but fundamentally, it was an emes, it was true. So then, b'di'evad, after the fact, the bracha would be acceptable. The classic example of this is if a person recited a borer pri adamo on an apple. Now, you weren't supposed to do that. You're supposed to recite a borer pri eitz on an apple. But if you recited a borer pri adamo, so if you think about it, that is a true statement. Apples grow on trees that grow in the ground. So I said borer pri adamo incorrectly, but at least b'di'evad, I would be yotze. And again, you have many, many other manifestations of this rule. One of the most common manifestations is the bracha of shahakol. If one said shahakol on anything, whether it's pizza, on sushi, on pineapple, on chocolate, on you name, whatever, shahakol niyevidoro is a true statement concerning any food that you eat. And therefore, if by mistake you recited shahakol, one would fulfill one's obligation. According to many, many poskim, the same is true with the words bori minei mizonos, because mazon means all kinds of food. So if you recited bori minei mizonos on an apple, although that wasn't what you were supposed to do, but after the fact, that would be acceptable. So again, it's an important rule to remember that if you make a mistake in Achos Brachos, it's not necessarily means you have to repeat the bracha, depending on whether that particular bracha was true. And if you just think it through for a minute, you'll probably realize pretty quickly whether the bracha that you said was accurate, at least ex post facto, or was it totally an inappropriate bracha that would have to be repeated. Very often we run into problems in Achos Brachos that we don't remember. We're not quite sure. We're so busy and we don't remember. Did we make a bracha? Did we not make a bracha? Did we bench? Did we not bench? Did we make it alamicha? Did we make a bonafashos? Did we make it asher yotzah? No doubt these things come up in our lifetimes. And the question is, in our lifetimes, it probably came up today. So what's our take on these kinds of things? Do we recite brachas over again or not? There's a general rule in Achos Brachos that sofik brachas lahokel. That if one has a doubt concerning a bracha, it's better not to recite a bracha rather than say an unnecessary bracha. And the reason for this is that reciting a bracha in an inappropriate manner is what's called a bracha levatala. Bracha levatala is a problem. That's prohibited. So if a person is not sure, did they recite a bracha or not, it's better not to recite the bracha. The only exception to this rule, the only absolute exception to this rule is benching. If a person is not sure whether he or she benched, so then that's a whole different ballgame. And the reason why that's different is because Birchas HaMazon is the only bracha that actually appears in the Chumash itself. The Torah speaks explicitly about V'achalta V'savalta V'rachta, that refers to after eating. So Birchas HaMazon, which is a mitzvah according to the Torah proper, one would have to bench over again if one's not sure whether one benched in the first place. Well, other brachas, one would err the side of caution and not repeat the bracha over again. However, this is only true if a person is really full, v'achalta v'savata. If a person's really, really satiated, then and only then does benching take on the Torah requirement, and then we would apply the rule, safek l'chumra, you would have to bench over again. If a person merely had a little bagel, something for lunch, and they could still eat some more, they're not really so full, so maybe they should be full, but they're not full, so then their obligation to bench is only midrabbanon. And if it's only rabbinic in nature, then once again, we say safek brachas lahakel. So again, the general rule in Achos Brachas is better not to say a bracha. If you're not sure, then don't recite a bracha. But if it's a Torah type for bracha, such as Birchas HaMazon, for the person who really, you just finished a whole full Shabbos meal, you're all stuffed to the gills, and then you got up and you started to wash the dishes, and then you can't remember, did I bench it or not? But like, Mamash, can't remember bench or not. So then maybe we would have to say luchumra. But short of that, if you just had some kind of had a couple pieces of sushi, I can't remember to make a bracha chron or not, so then it's better just don't make the bracha. Just the safi bracha lahakel, it's better to leave out the bracha. Okay, so we have to summon again some of the basic introductions that govern Achos Brachos, the importance of enunciating the words, understanding the words, staying stationary and kind of focusing on the bracha proper, the issues that come up in terms of sveikas, things of that nature, incorrect brachas, correct brachas, inappropriate brachas, off brachas, things of all of that above, that's we really categorize as the first issue in Achos Brachos, really the ABCs of brachas. Then we roll into a second area of Achos Brachos, which I would say probably took up most of the questions that I received. I would say it was close to about 60% were almost the same question. Everyone had a little bit of a different nuance to it, but it was pretty much revolving around the following. And I'll give you a little bit of a background as to why I think this was, in fact, the shaila of the millennium, or the shaila at least of this year. Why is that? It goes back to when I was, it was my last semester in YU, and I was majoring in Jewish studies, Jewish history, and I was one course short in order to graduate. And that course wasn't being given, and I had a big problem. I had to graduate. I had one foot out the door to go back to Israel to learn, and I had to finish the course. So one of the professors was very kind to me and offered me a self... There's a reason why I'm telling this story. Hang in there. I'm just sharing my woes of 30-plus years ago. I took an independent study course. The independent study course was about certain issues related to history of halacha, things of that nature. And one of the things that I had to do, one of the papers that I had to do for that course was I had to read a whole series of tshuvas that were written in about the 1500s and the 1600s in Eastern Europe, and to almost like work backwards and to write a historical study of what the economic and social issues were in those times based on what the tshuvas were. Based on the types of shailas and tshuvas that were asked, to be able to go backwards and figure out what was on the mind of the amcha, the average person living in Poland in the 1600s, okay, the kinds of shailas that he was asking. Interesting, it was an interesting assignment. I definitely passed the course because I'm here today, so good, all's good. So it got me thinking a little bit that very often when you want to know something about a society, you want to know what's making a society tick, it's a good test case, is go look at the shailas. So any Rav today will tell you that the most popular shailas throughout the year are the following. It comes Chanukah, there are many, many, many shailas in Chanukah. There are simanim in Shulchan Aruch Chanukah, and there's only one shail that's asked today. There's one small din tucked away in the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch about if a person happens not to be home on night of Hanukkah. In the days of Chazal, it was where are you going? Who's traveling? We don't. You live in your house. You stay in your house. Where else do you think you're going? So it was almost like, it was a theoretical discussion. Once in a blue moon, someone had to be away one night of Hanukkah. And, what do you do in those cases? Today, any Rav will tell you 99.9% of the Chazal, nobody cares about playing dreidel and about life. The only shadows people ask today is, Rabbi, I'm going to this party here and I'm going to be over there tonight and I'm leaving over here. My wife's here, my kids here, my son's here, my daughter's here. Everyone's all over the place. Where and when and who and what do I light the menorah? So what does that indicate about us? That we are a generation on the move. That is, in the 15th century in Poland, people stayed in one place. You were born in one place, you lived in that place, then died in that place. That was it. If you were lucky, if you met out 5 feet from where you were born. Today, everyone's moving and running, everything. So Chuchas Chanukah dictates that. There's one tiny, tiny line in Shulchan Aruch about the status of a person who happens to live in Eretz Yisrael and find themselves in Chutz La'aretz for Yontav Sheni or vice versa. And any Rav knows, that's the hottest topic on the scene. I mean, not the hottest, there are a lot of topics, we'll leave that out for now. They're a very, very, very exciting topic. A lot of shaylas, a lot of permutations of the shaila. Why? In the olden days, it was inconceivable. Where are you going? Who's going? You live in Eretz Yisrael, you stay in Eretz Yisrael. You live in Chutz Yisrael. Who in the world is going? I'm going to Eretz Yisrael for 6 hours. It was unheard of. So it's a new world we live. We live in a moving generation. So I think Yochas Brachas dictates the same thing, and that was proven to me by the list of shaylas. The overwhelming majority of the shaila was, Dear Rabbi Sablowski, I'm drinking a bottle of water and I'm walking from this room to that room. Rabbi Sablowski, I'm drinking my Gatorade and I'm moving from here to there. Rabbi Sablowski, I'm drinking my... It was all the same shaila. It was just some people are drinking Gatorade, some people are drinking water, some people have done the Diet Coke, some have a cup of coffee. But it was a fundamental same shaila. I'm on the move. What happens next in terms of Chuchas Brachas? So we'll try to talk about that as a topic in of itself. What happens to our on-the-move generation? How does it play out in terms of Chuchas Brachas? So since the most popular shaila was water, that'll be honest, I suspect that I would have been giving the shiur for the guys in the shiva, that probably wouldn't have been the number one beverage. Maybe Diet Coke may have been up there, or maybe regular Coke, but the water was definitely the number one question here. So before we even start, we have to ask ourselves a strange question. Who says you make a bracha on water? Do you make a bracha on water? So the answer is, believe it or not, it depends. It depends why you're drinking the water. You don't always recite a bracha on water. You only recite a bracha on water if you are thirsty. As I am thirsty right now, I recite a bracha on water. You recite a bracha on water if you're thirsty. If you're not thirsty, so why are you drinking the water? I'm drinking the water because I'm trying to swallow a pill. I'm drinking the water because I'm choking on something. The halacha is, if you drink water for any other reason besides being thirsty, one does not recite the bracha. Why is water different? Very simple. Water doesn't really have any taste. So you're not really enjoying the water. You're only enjoying the water because it is quenching your thirst. So water, unique to all other foods and drinks, only warrants a bracha if one is thirsty.
So if you're drinking it because it's good to drink, how number of bottles of water a day?
That's the multi-million dollar question. This is usually when I come to NCS White Coal every summer, so these are the first two questions I get inundated by. It says, how long do I have to take off my tzitzis in order to make another bracha? So we're not going to talk about that here. And the second question is, if I'm drinking water because the madrich on the teal told me that if I don't drink water, I'm going to dehydrate, end up in the hospital and ruin it for everybody else, I really don't want to drink the water. Do I make a bracha now? So that's a big question. That's a big machlekes poskim. Does one recite a bracha on water if one is drinking the water for preventing dehydration kinds of svaras or not? There are many poskim who maintain that yes, and there's some poskim who say no. It's hard for me to give an absolute answer to that question. Honestly, I personally thought that not. My humble personal opinion was not to recite a bracha under those circumstances, but there are gedolei poskim who do. So I'm going to leave it hanging. Whatever you're doing, whatever you have been doing, you can continue to do. Sometimes it's a hard call. Am I really thirsty? Not really thirsty. I have this problem when it comes to giving shiurim, because what usually happens with shiurim is as follows. I tend to drink water when I speak because my throat starts to get dry and it helps the speaking a little clearer. Now I just have a bit cold, so it's just not clear anyway, so ignore that. But I tend to drink water when I'm giving shiurim. And it's hard to judge. Am I really thirsty? Not really thirsty, but I drink otherwise. I'm not really sure. So usually what I do is, and here's the secret, that right before I start a shiur, if I remember, I always have a little shahakal tucked away, a little something to make a bracha on. That way I don't have to start to make a cheshbon in the middle of the shiur. Am I thirsty? Am I not thirsty? Do I make a bracha? Do I not make a bracha? So it's for a reason like this that the rabbi has certain, they're not big treats, they're little, tiny. They are so little. Let's see if I can find one here. Some of them. Tracy. Some of them look like this. Some of them are even smaller than this. But before I start a Shia, one, and that way there's no suffix anymore whether one recites a bracha or not on the water that one drinks. Okay? So that was the secret of the trade. The only problem is the shroom that I give before davening in the morning are a problem, because you're not allowed to eat or drink anything else besides water before davening, so that's my problem. So I have to deal with that in a different way, but not now. Anyway, so drinking water when you're thirsty warrants a bracha. Drinking water when you're not thirsty does not warrant a bracha. So I made my bracha on my water, and now I'm, the course of the day, let's say, best case scenario, I'm not going anywhere. I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm sipping away at the water. I sip a little bit of water now, do a little work, sip away, check a couple emails, sip away. That's okay. One bracha can take you a long way. If there was what we call no hesech hadas, there was no real clear end of the drinking of the water, so then you're good to go. The same bracha continues. Well, what if, let's say, during the course of the day, you took something else? Let's say you had some mezonos or something, and you made a mezonos, and you made an alhamichia, so then the clock starts up again. Then you have to make a new bracha on the water. Once you ended an achila by making a bracha charon on other foods, so then it's over, and then it's almost like a new drinking of water, then you would have to restart the bracha. So as long as you're in the same place, one does not have to repeat a bracha. One should not repeat a bracha on the water, as long as there hasn't been any really clear ending of the drink. If you haven't had a sip in the last 4 hours, then probably you ended the drinking. Most of the time, a person who's just drinking during the course of the day would not recite a bracha acharona, because in order to recite a bar nefashos, one only recites a bar nefashos if one drinks a revius, pretty much at one quick sitting. So let's say a revius is approximately 3 ounces. So if a person drinks 3 ounces in one shot, that would warrant the bracha acharona. If a person has a sip now, a sip 2 minutes later, a sip 5 minutes later, one would not recite a bracha acharona. There is a big question about bracha acharona hot drinks. Usually people drink a cup of hot tea, a cup of coffee, a cocoa or something. It takes more than a certain amount of time to drink it. So there are some poskim who maintain that since that's the normal way of drinking, you could still make a bracha charon on that. So that's already a questionable point. But when it comes to water, if a person is just drinking throughout the day and no real clear breaks and no movement or anything, so then the original bracha would actually continue.
But if you're drinking a big bottle of water and you have 3 ounces, you have to stop and say a bracha.
No, you keep on going. You can just keep on. At some point when you finish drinking, finally you should make a bracha charon. As long as it's not tomorrow, but it's within reason. Yeah.
It could technically. I should have asked this question many, probably years ago. But I do home care, so I literally have a cup like of coffee, let's say, and I'll make a stop at a patient, and I'll be there for 40 minutes, and then I'll come back in the car and take another sip, drive to my next patient. So
okay, so we haven't even mentioned yet the issue of shinei makom. We haven't even said the word about leaving the place.
It's in my car. I'm only drinking in my car.
But you're leaving the car.
I leave the car, but come right
back. Okay. That may make all the difference in the world. Okay, so let's see. Wait, let's. Okay, well, it's not there. It's the next topic. It's okay. According to this list here, it's somewhere along the way. Right after, between taking long breaks and guidelines of changing places. Okay? So, thank you, Lila. So, what's the halach of a person is eating? We'll leave that to water in the core for a second. I'm eating a real meal. I'm eating a meal. I'm in the middle of the meal, and I get up and I go out for a second. I go daven mincha in the middle, I come back. What's the din? So, the Gemara says that if you really change your place, then you have to make a new bracha. However, if you make a new bracha, however, that's only true if the following conditions are met. Let's say I'm eating together with other people, and I leave some people behind. I ran out to catch an early mincha, and I come back, and everyone else is still eating dessert, so then I do not make a new bracha. As long as I'm still part of the original chabura, the original group, I'm still covered by my original bracha. That's not considered to be a heschadas, that's not considered to be a break. Or, if it's a type of a food that one has to recite a bracha achrona in that place. Let's say, for example, bread. One must bench in the place that a person ate. One must recite an alhamichya in a place that a person ate. Other foods do not require, so you can make a bar nefashos technically somewhere else. You can even make an ala eitz or something somewhere else. But the bracha, birchas hamazon, or alhamichya has to be recited in the place that you are. Even if you left, so one has to come back. Unless you're on a plane already and you forgot, oh yeah, the plane just took off, and I remember I ate lunch in the airport, so then you have no choice. Then you have to bench on the plane. But one is supposed to, if at all possible, if it's practical, one's supposed to actually go back to the place where they left. So if it's a type of a food that you would have to return anyway, then your leaving doesn't constitute a break, because the rationale is, well, I'm still coming back. So let's say I was eating a home meal. I washed, I had my bagel in the middle of eating, and then I run out, I leave nobody behind, I run out to shul to daf mincha, and I come back 20 minutes later, and now I want to continue, have another bagel or something. I don't have to recite another bracha, because since a bagel is the kind of food that requires benching, so the bracha is still intact. However, let's say I was eating an apple. I was munching on an apple, and I run to shul, and I come back 20 minutes later, and I want to finish. Okay, my apple is probably not the best example. I was eating a bag of popcorn. And I'm eating my bag of popcorn in the house, doing my studying for my finals or something. I run outside for a few minutes, come back in, so then I have to make a new bracha. You have to recite a new bracha on the popcorn, because that's what's called shinei makom. Unless a person didn't literally leave the place. Namely, if it's in the same building, so then that's a big question whether that's called leaving the place. That's probably okay. Or if it's on the same mamish property, you could see it. Let's say, for example, I go outside to the sukkah or something, or the backyard, I can still see it's the same property, so you can argue that's still kind of the same place. But if I go somewhere else, so then one would be required to recite a new bracha. Okay? In terms of the last point to recite a bracha, say a person ate, so one should try to recite the bracha as soon as they finish eating, otherwise you tend to forget. If some time has elapsed and you're still pretty much full from what you ate, so then you could still bench, or still recite an al hamichya, etc. We usually think in terms of that magic number, 72 minutes. If I heard that number when you were kids, 72 minutes, you're good to go. So the post can say 72 minutes is good for bread. But let's say I was munching on some popcorn, so I don't know about you, but I could get hungry again for more popcorn 20 minutes later. So bottom line is, you should try to make a bracha when you finish. As soon as you finish, if you want to continue eating popcorn for an hour, that's fine. But if and when you reach the point of making a bracha achrona, you should recite the bracha achrona at that point. Just as interesting about popcorn is that it takes a lot of popcorn to be obligated to make a bracha achrona, because there's nothing in popcorn. It's all air. So I don't know how many pieces of popcorn require bracha achrona, but I think it's a lot.
I ask you a question. What she was saying, if you go into the car and out of the car, that's a shinei makom?
I think that's a shinei makom, yeah.
Every time you get coffee?
You mean it's the same coffee?
It's the same thing as her. I'm just curious.
It's the same cup of coffee?
Place. Yeah, you could go to the store. For 3 hours, it could be sitting in your car.
Right.
If you are to do such a thing. Yeah. Every
So the only thing is, the only possible way to avoid shinei makom with that is, there are some poskim who say, if you walk around with a cup of coffee in your hand. There's some poskim who say. Now, I don't know how practical that's going to be. Probably not that practical. Right. I think when you pull up in a car, you get out of the car, I think that's called shinei makom. No, you don't have to technically make a bracha achrona, because the bracha achrona at the end can finish it all off, right?
Same thing with the popcorn, you're saying.
Right.
Don't say bracha achrona.
Right. If for whatever reason, and then come back and then make a new bracha on the popcorn. Right. Right, I think so.
I don't want to make a bracha achrona if you drink enough.
If you had enough, right.
He has a question.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You have a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You go from room to room. When I go into the room, I do an exam. I put the coffee down. I sit there for, let's say, 15 minutes. Pick up the same coffee. I go to
But it's all the same building, right?
It's all the same building.
Same building, you're okay. You're good to go. The same building, you're all right. Okay. The poskim say, when you start that bracha rishona, I have in mind, hini mucham zum, and I'm drinking this coffee, and the entire day, at least we're in the same house, we're in the same room. Okay. Good. Okay, so up until now, we spoke about almost like the general rules of brachas. Now let's try to get into some specifics, and we'll try, again, obviously we're not going to be able to do justice to everything, but we'll try to speak about many, many of the almost like questionable foods, at least some that made it on the list. You can add a few. We'll be happy to take some questions at the end. So I'll just go through again some of the Rashi Prachim, some of the questions that we asked. So the top question, believe it or not, was about, I'm not saying just the top in terms of the list yet, it was quinoa. I'll tell you a secret. I'm not sure what the question was. Quinoa grows in the ground, and it's nothing else except growing in the ground, and therefore the correct bracha is a bar priadama on quinoa. So, you know, whether you like eating quinoa and Pesach or not, whether you think it's kidneys or not, the bottom line is it's a bar priadama. So I think it's a clear bar priadama. Then we have a question about wraps. Spelling. So wraps. Wraps. The correct bracha on wraps should be obvious. Just look at the first ingredient, wraps, flour and water. So you make a hamotzi on wraps. Unless they're tortilla wraps. If they're tortilla wraps, then they're corn, then they're shahakol. But if the corn flour is shahakol. But if they're regular wraps, so just a plain straight hamotzi. No matter what color they are, they're not made of flour? Okay. If I say anything that's like really controversial, you can stop me. So there is actually an interesting rule in Hilchos Brachos. If you have a bread-like product that what's called lacking tzuras hapas, it doesn't give off the impression of looking like bread, so then sometimes that may change the bracha, possibly. But a wrap, what do you mean it's not looking like bread? It's a sandwich. You put tuna inside, you eat it. So it's a different shape. It's a thin pita bread, whatever. It's another form of bread. It's basically a hamotzi. I remember there was once an elderly Rav who was holding up. He was sitting next to him in a meeting, and he was holding up a wrap, and it was a green wrap. And he's looking at it. He's close to about 90 years old already. He's looking at it, and he said, you know, in Europe, you know, he said, this is Nishkin Tirasapas. There's no Tirasapas on this thing. He says, who ever heard of green bread? He was very, very frustrated. But the Mechilas Kvotarasa, I think you'd make a hamelt even on the green bread. That's the bottom line. It looks like bread. I think it's bread. Then we have up here something, believe it or not, nobody asked. So I was going to put it in because how can I say Shinuch's brach? I mentioned this. Pizza. What brach do you make on pizza? So the answer to the question, it seems to me to be pretty straightforward with a basic, general basic rule. The Gemara tells us that there's bread and then what's called Pas habobikistin. Pas habobikistin means a snacky kind of a food. It kind of looks like bread. It's almost made exactly like bread, but it has some characteristics to it that people generally view it as a snack. It's more of a snacky, cakey, cookie-ish kind of food rather than a meal food, and therefore the bracha is mezonos on it, unless you eat so much of it that you have what's called kaveh suda, that you really sat down and had a whole X amount, whatever that X amount is, you ate a significant amount. What are some good examples of pas habobikistin? Exhibit A. Cookies are possible to kiss them. Therefore, if a person has 3-4 cookies, you make him his onus. If you have a kazais, you make him alamichia. But if you would down that entire box of cookies besides having a stomachache, you would probably be required to wash the tilos yadayim with a bracha, recite hamotzi, and bench. Because by eating so much of the possible kiss, then you have transformed it into being bread. So that would be an example of possibly kiss, and say it would be true for cake, crackers, things of that nature. But according to many poskim, any food that is fundamentally a meal kind of a food, it's not really a snack food. It's a meal food. It doesn't matter what it looks like, tastes like, smells like. It's bread, and that's it. And that's all there is in it. That is bread, no matter what it looks like. According to that view, and again, this is not an absolute unanimous view. I agree that there are some who disagree. But according to many, many poskim, any food that is associated with mealtime, even if you personally are eating it as a snack, that is bread. It's just outright bread. And therefore, we'll take a quick show of hands. Who here honestly thinks that in America, in the year Tufshin Ayin Tes, pizza is more of a meal food? Who here thinks it's more of a meal food? Good. Who here thinks it's more of a snack food?
There's no men in the room.
Okay. So I always say that anyone who knows the environment of 187th Street and Amsterdam Avenue, it's YU headquarters, that is not a proof of normal eating habits. And just because you see MTA kids running at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with pizza in their hands, forget the shirimokha mishas. So that, I don't think that's correct. I don't think that determines that luck. I think it determines based on, you walk to a regular pizza store at 6 o'clock, it's crowded. You walk at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, there's nobody there. So I think that pizza is a meal food, and therefore, again, it appears to me, I'm not saying that everyone agrees, but it appears to me that the correct bracha on pizza is hamotzi. One washes and veggies on pizza, even if one eats a small amount. If you eat more than a kazayas, then you would have to bench, even on the colloquial one slice of pizza or half or whatever it would be, one would be required to wash and bench. I well aware of the fact that not everybody agrees to this. I'm just presenting to you what I think is the very popular approach and perhaps should be the approach that's taken.
What if you serve like your kids pancakes for supper?
Okay, so pancakes, believe it or not, happen to be a little bit different. Pancakes are good because pancakes are very different pizza, that they're a batter. They're not a dough, so that may be a whole different ballgame.
Yeah,
but
cake you said if you ate it.
Right, right. So pancakes may be even better than cake because pancakes are prepared on a stove top kind of a thing rather than in an oven. So that also makes things a little bit different.
You don't have to make a pancake, as of now.
The truth is, I think not. I think you can eat 100 pancakes and still make mezonos. But there's a very chashra say from Inuchas Brachas that says something different. I don't understand it. I think that the brachas is the mezonos, but there are some who disagree.
What about those waffles that they have with like ice cream?
That's right. So those are generally snacks. So as long as that's not your mainstay of your meal, okay, Blima walked out as I said that, as long as it's not the mainstay of a meal, so then
serve that as meal.
Okay, so that would be a question. Then there would be, in fact, the question what the correct broth would be on that.
What about croissants?
I knew we're heading. Okay, we're going to take the rest of the show because this is it. Okay, we'll answer the croissant, no problem. Again, I will tell you what I think. I think that regular croissants, not chocolate croissants and, you know, sweetie, regular plain simple croissant, I think the correct bracha is hamotzi. And I think that one is required to wash and bench on a croissant because I think it's fundamentally the same as pizza. I think that's something that is almost indistinguishable from bread. And the biggest proof is, if you go to a bris, where are the croissants kept at a bris? Anyone know?
Bagels.
They're with the bagels. Where are they not? They're not with the cookies and cakes. because people eat them as the mainstay of the meal, and therefore they consider to be a mitzvah. For this reason, of course, that the poskim, most of the poskim tell us that this concept called the mezonos roll is a contradiction in terms, because by the very definition that it's made for the purposes of serving as a roll in a meal, it cannot be mezonos. It, by definition, is made to be a motzi. Therefore, again, I'm not saying there aren't dissenting views, but it appears to me that the din is that one would have to wash and bench on a mezonos roll as well.
Should somebody first eat a real hamotzi?
No, I don't think so.
Right, like when you're eating waffles, should you wash on the waffle, or should you ask them for a piece of bread?
So it depends. If you're having an entire meal of waffles, depending on what you consider kriya suda to be, you would probably choke if I told you what the maximum shiur kriya suda is, the equivalent of 21 and 3/5 eggs worth of
waffle.
You want to open
it. No,
that's
what people do. People do take a waffle for breakfast, Belgian waffle. You go walk into Lazy Bean, you see it all the time.
But it's also a batter. You make it in the batter.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm gonna have to hold off on the waffles. I'm gonna have to really, really defer on the waffles. Okay, fine. Let's go back. I feel like I'm, I feel that I feel like. I'm not in such a terrible company that apparently Rabbi Lichtenstein was once on a plane and he got up to wash for one of the mezonos rolls, and the stewardess said to him that maybe when he gets to Israel he should check with his rabbi whether the bracha is hamotzi or not. So he said he'll take care of it. As soon as he gets home, we'll check with the rabbi. I say that because I was once in Yerushalayim at Uri's Pizza many, many years ago, and there's a big sign there that says that not to wash on the pizza, and I got up to wash, couldn't find the dime cup anywhere in sight, but finally I washed, and a little Yerushalmi kid about this big says to me, "Ataloya de'a ech likro," you don't know how to read? Katuv sham, lo notlim yadayim ala pizza. I said, oh my goodness, thank you so much, I didn't know how to read. Okay, fine. Okay, get back to that story. So as the corollary, or maybe the opposite, was a question that was brought up by Blima, that's the garlic nuts. Okay, so what is the correct bracha on the garlic nuts? So you would think, oh, the garlic nuts, that's like a mini pizza. Well, not really. What do most people eat garlic nuts for? They a meal? I mean, you sit down and eat garlic nuts for lunch? I mean, you'll eat something else, right? But it's made for the purposes of snacking. I think that it's snacking, and therefore thing then is different. I think it's almost the equivalent of a soft pretzel. Like the big hot soft pretzels, I think are mezonos, even though they're identical to bread, if you think about it. But since they're made primarily for snacking, most people don't sit down and eat a pretzel for lunch, unless maybe it's a cheese pretzel, the big giant super duper cheese pretzels. But a regular, those big hot pretzels. So I think that those are mezonos. So again, the criteria that we're using are meals versus snacks. Okay, let's move on to something else. We're already in the pizza store mode, so we'll talk about mozzarella sticks. So mozzarella sticks, what is the bracha mozzarella sticks? Shahapal, right? Well, why would one think otherwise? Because they have coating, they have a flour on them. So maybe one would think that the correct bracha is mezonos. So I'll challenge you, what bracha do you make on schnitzel? So believe it or not, some poskim say you make mezonos on schnitzel, but most people have the custom to say shahakol, myself included, that even though there is flour on and the flour tastes pretty good and enhances, makes it taste better, but the overwhelming main purpose of the schnitzel is the schnitzel part. And that's where Moshe Feinstein writes in a shoe, that people tend not to sit down. People eat chicken by itself, but nobody would sit down. We hope and eat breadcrumbs by themselves. So therefore, the mainstay of schnitzel is considered to be the chicken, and therefore the bracha would be shahakol. So I think the same is the mozzarella sticks. It's also shahakol. Okay, now I think we're done with the pizza store. Let's move into some other interesting and related...
Pretzel chicken,
instead of the breadcrumbs.
Right. I was wondering about that. One of the many reasons why I don't eat pretzel chicken. But... pretzel chicken, I could hear somebody arguing is mezonos. Because of that very reason that people do, because people do eat pretzels.
Pita chips.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let's finish what we got on the list, and we'll take all questions from the above. Okay. Here we have something which is a very generic term. Chocolate-covered things. All right? Because there are so many. And yes, Tova, I'll share the story for you. Okay? So Ramesha finds it out a famous psach about some of the chocolate covered things, and he recited two brachas on them. Ramesha ate these things, but he said you make two brachas. For example, if you have, let's say, chocolate covered raisins, or Ramesha had a famous psach that you recite ha'etz on the raisin, and you recite shahakol on the chocolate part. In that order, you should really recite the eighth before the shahakol. You always try to get the more specific bracha than the general bracha first. So you have to break it apart. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach disagreed. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said that he thinks he should just make ha'etz. Why is that? Because Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, because in our heart of hearts, probably the correct bracha on chocolate is, catch this one, right. is probably ha'etz, because we all know the shochet comes from cocoa beans that grew on trees. There is no real reason why we don't recite ha'etz on shochet. We don't. It's a minhag Yisrael that we don't, and for whatever reason, there are some reasons. Rav Shlomo Zalman felt that if you're already saying ha'etz on the raisins, don't make an additional bracha on the chocolate. It's a shadow of bracha batala. Just make one bracha of ha'etz on both. But I think in America, most people don't do that. Those who eat chocolate covered raisins. I think that the psach in America has been like a Moshe that one recites two brachas. So this was a very controversial issue back in what grade was it? Sixth? Fifth grade? Sixth grade? Fourth grade? Third grade?
Fourth.
Younger, fourth grade. In the brachas B, where the final question in the Broyer's brachas B that Tova got out on, much to her chagrin, was what bracha do you recite on chocolate covered raisins? And she knew exactly what it said in the Brachas B booklet. It said ha'etz and shakal. But it took her a second to answer. And she said, bore pri ha'etz. And then she was about to say shakal. And she must have stopped for a second. Wrong. No second bracha. And that was the end. She came home to inform me what happened. I said, go tell the principal that according to Shlomo Zalman, you were right. That is the only bracha. There is only a bracha of race. So, of course, that didn't get too far. So we go down history together, like father, like daughter. I lost the fifth grade brachas B, the championship. I'm still, you know, still heartbroken from it. I don't think Corey was still with me by then, but fifth grade, I'm not so sure. I think you probably left by that point. But me and Corey Bardesh were classmates back in the early years. But by the time I got to fifth grade, so I was in the brachas B, and I got out on what bracha do you make on olive oil when it's eaten together with bread for medicinal purposes? I mean, some. That's what I said, huh? And the kid and the other kid who won, they asked him what bracha to make on an apple, and he won, and I was very upset. Okay, whatever. All's well that ends well. I did get, though, a one-year subscription as a booby prize, the one-year subscription to Olamenu, if anyone remembers what that was. Remember that? Mendel the Mouse? Okay, in the old days. Just dated ourselves back in the old days. Okay.
Riverdale.
We'll tell you that. Off the, when the tapes are off, I'll tell you the end of that story, but not now, for sure not now. Okay, we're on recording right now. Twizzlers, or any of these licorice, any of these kinds of stuff. What bracha would one make in this? So let's give a little bit of an intro to the Twizzler story. The Gemara tells us that anything that has flour in it is automatically mizonos. Even if the flour is not the mainstay, flour by definition is important. The definition is chashuv, it's the ikar. Unless the flour is put just as a binder. So let's say, for example, if you eat gefilte fish, there was flour in gefilte fish. It's called matzah meal. What bracha do you make on gefilte fish? You don't make mizonos. It has flour in it. So the answer is that the flour is not there for taste. The flour is just there to keep the fish together, all right? That's the goal. So then you don't make mizonos. You don't make shakal. So many years ago, when licorice was first became kosher, it was actually, they brought a piece of licorice to Ramosha, and they asked Ramosha, what bracha do you make on licorice? Ramosha had absolutely no idea what licorice was. So he asked somebody who was involved in Ashkoch and the company of licorice, who probably gave Ramosha the wrong information and told Ramosha that the flour plays a major component and it adds to the taste of the licorice. And they told Ramosha that. Ramosha said, okay, so then you make mizonos on licorice. So thus began the psak in the Torah Mesorah little brachas booklet back in the 1970s that the correct brach on licorice is mizonos. Others came to the realization that they're not sure if that's true. That the reason why they put flour in licorice, it doesn't add the taste. There's only one reason I put it on. What licorice really is just a lot of sugar and a lot of food coloring, a lot of not such healthy things. But you can't sit down and have a spoonful of sugar and red food coloring. So they have to give it some mushes to it, some substance to it. So somebody came up with this great idea that if you take a piece of dough and you put all the garbage on that piece of dough, you could sell it as licorice, and that became Twizzlers. So if that's true, then the dough, the flour, is not doing anything. It's just there as a way to eat the sugar and the food coloring. So then the bracha shahakol. So I think that those facts are the more correct facts. So I think that one should recite the bracha shahakol on Twizzlers. And if you want to have 1,000 Twizzlers, you won't even have to wash the bench. So I'll give you a break on that one if you so desire. Okay. And now we get to our multi-million dollar question, and that's the question of sushi. That's what we're here tonight for, okay? I see everyone's holding back, and no one wants to touch any food, I'm afraid to make a mistake. We'll talk about sushi for a little bit, okay? And then again, we open the questions afterwards. So sushi is a good model to discuss the rules of ikar v'tafel in general. It's a general rule the Mishnah tells in brachas, when you have a food that's made up of multiple components, you make the bracha on the main part, and you don't make a bracha on the secondary part. Let's say, for example, you have a bowl of cereal and milk. So you make, if it's a mizonis kind of cereal, make mizonis on it. And you don't make a bracha, you don't make a shakal on the milk. For that matter, sometimes in cereal you have things that are, so you have raisin bran. So the main part is the cereal. You throw in a few raisins, you add a little flavor to it, but the primarily you're eating a bowl, you're not sitting down eating a bowl of raisins. If you want to eat a bowl of raisins, you eat a bowl of raisins. So you're eating a bowl of cereal and you're just throwing the raisins in to give a little taste to it. So that's basically a mizonis, that's all.
Same thing with a banana.
If you would slice a little piece of banana into your cereal, so then, yes, then if your primary goal is to eat the cereal, you just want to put the banana to give a little bit of a tom to it, so then the bracha would be mizonos. So let's say you have French fries and ketchup or something. So you make adoma on the French fries, and if you would eat ketchup plain, then you would make shahakal on it. But if you eat it together with French fries, then the bracha is going to be adoma. So the general rule is, how do you know whether something is eek or something is tafel? So sometimes it's obvious. If the purpose of food B is to enhance food A, then it's obvious. But sometimes it's not so obvious. Sometimes not one is enhancing the other. They're on equal footing. I'm eating a dish that's made up of two different ingredients. So how do you know which is eek or which is tafel? So here the rule is as follows. You follow the rove, whatever the majority is, unless it's something that's flour, unless like a mizonos of flour. Mizonos of flour, if it's there for taste, so then that carries the day, and you always make a bracha on that. So now, let's think it through in terms of, let's say, for example, a salad. So you're having a salad, and the bulk of the salad is hadoma. Let's say you threw in some mushrooms into the salad. Mushrooms are shahakal. Mushrooms don't really grow in the ground. They receive some nourishment off of the ground, but they're not really in the ground itself. So mushrooms are shahakal. So you throw one or two little mushrooms into your salad, you still make hadoma on the entire salad, including the mushrooms, unless you single out the mushrooms. Let's say if when I take a spoonful, I take a forkful of salad, so if every spoonful or forkful has a little bit of cucumbers and tomatoes and mushrooms, then you make adama. But if it's so clearly demarcated pieces that I'm going after the mushrooms separately, so then you would recite hadama on the salad and shakal on the mushrooms. So again, you throw tuna. So if the tuna is mixed in, it's all thrown in together, and every scoopful of tuna always has some other things in it, so then it's still hadama is the rov.
But if you're eating the salad and you're like specifically like you want the protein.
You really and
you wouldn't eat salad.
So if it's not mixed in, if you have some of the tuna separately, you make a separate bracha on the tuna. If it's all mixed together and the rove is the salad, and if you really just want a tuna, you would have bought tuna. It's much cheaper than buying a whole salad.
What about olives?
So the olives also, they're little olives, and they're sliced up, and they're always, every time you take a spoonful, you take something else, so then it's all covered by the bracha. It's not sure, it's batel, it's tafel. But if the olives are clearly demarcated, and you take an olive separately, so then the bracha would be differently. Okay? But mizonos trumps everything. That's the reason why cholent, the bracha is mizonos and cholent. If you're eating cholent, not in the context of a meal, if you're eating cholent, then because there's barley in cholent, so you make mizonos, because every spoonful of cholent has some mizonos, has some barley in it. You would only make a bracha acharon of al amich if you ate enough barley. So not every bowl full of cholent has no barley in it, so that's already a whole nother question. How do you calculate that? So those are the general rules. Sometimes it's not clear. It's not clear what the majority is. It's not clear whether one food's enhancing another. Nothing's clear. So that poses a big challenge to Mesuchas Brachas. So we look at Exhibit A. Take a look at a piece of sushi. So we have mizonos here, but what's the problem with this mizonos? It's not real mizonos. It's rice. I mean, rice is mizonos, but it's not shivas aminim. It's not a flour. It's not a wheat barley kind of mizonos. It's a rice mizonos. Therefore, it's subject to the regular rules. What's the rove of this? Is the majority rice? Is the majority, I can't see what's inside. This is a cucumber sushi. And this one is not fish. This one does have the fish in it. Okay. Some of it has got some seaweed in there. So, I don't know. Every time I sit around and make sushi, I try to figure out what the rove is. I'm not sure what the rove is. Is one piece enhancing the other? It's all good. I mean, why do people eat sushi? Because the whole thing together tastes good. So, I'm a little weary. I'm not 100% sure. So my study of sushi has yielded the fact that there are four potential brachas inside any given piece of sushi. You have the mizonos of the rice. You'll have some shahakal in there probably for the fish ones. You will have hadama in there if there's some cucumber or some other stuff in there. You may have ha'etz in there if you have avocado in the sushi. So you could theoretically end up with four potential brachas. Therefore, it appears to me that the safest way to, I'm not saying this is absolute psak, there are some who say, no, they look at it, mostly rice, they make mizonos on it. I hear that. But it appears to me that the safest way to approach sushi is to cover it with four brachas, four separate brachas, namely, take a little pretzel before and make a mezonos in the pretzel. You take a little fruit and make an eitz on your apple. You take a carrot, you have your adama, you have your chocolate, and you have a shakal. After you've knocked off all four brachas, then enjoy your sushi.
That's a lot.
Yeah, but that's whether you go to the store. No, this I'm not liking. You go to the store.
I didn't think you're going to like tonight. You're the one who has.
First, can you just take
your
first one apart?
No, but from now on, when you go to, let's say, to Grand and Essex or Cedar Market, they should have all those exhibits, because most people do, except if you're eating it at home when you have access to this, that, right, and the other thing.
Have you ever seen me eat a sushi
in
the store?
No, not you, but what about everyone else here?
What about people who just go to
Buy
Express
and take one sushi for lunch?
So though, can you take apart
no, that's
that
a problem. Piece? That's a shiloh, because you're almost like creating another. Those who really are stuck, who votes that rice is the rove? Who thinks that rice is the majority?
When you make it at home, you put a fair amount of rice, and you can't put that much in.
Okay. Those who want to make mezonos and sushi have a right to do so. But the oven mezonos is good in any food anyway, remember we said? So those who want to make mezonos on sushi have a right to do so.
Instead of buying sushi, we should really buy three things.
Four things.
Depends what you're buying.
Okay, so anyway.
The fancier your sushi, the more trouble you're getting into.
Or just take it apart the first piece.
No, that's a shyle of taking it apart.
Why can't you take it apart?
Because, let's say I take apart my salad, that may be creating new brachas on food that doesn't really warrant the brachas. That's it gets complicated. That's so simple. Okay. I knew this was going to be a little whopper at the end. I don't want to leave anyone on a downer with the sushi. So we'll open up. We'll open up to some. No, so I thought we would just open up the floor to some questions.
So just one question first, and then with the, when you're talking about the beginning, when Rachel was talking about like walking around with food, you were talking about traveling with food. But what about what I want to share? What I wanted was me walking around eating. That's not preferable, right? I'm not talking about walking from.
Like, in the same
you're
house?
Walking that's around with a bag of popcorn. That's okay. You're walking around with yogurt. Shouldn't you sit down at the end and say a bracha charona?
Yeah. The eating itself is okay to walk around. A bracha charona, if it's a mazur ala michya, has to be sat down for. But an fashas technically can be said standing in one place. You shouldn't be walking around, that's what we said before. You should never be walking around doing other things during the making of brachos, any brachos. But in terms of actually sitting down, only with samazan ala michya required to be sat down for. But an fashas can be said standing in place also. But it shouldn't be walking, schwitzing around and, you know, on the phone and checking emails, that kind of stuff. Okay, we'll open up for some questions.
You can say foods? Okay.
We'll try. We'll only try.
Granola bars.
And
I know some people just don't eat it.
Okay. The correct oatmeal is most probably mezonos.
Like the reason, hot cereal oatmeal.
The reason why there was some who questioned whether oatmeal or for that matter, any oat products, there was a little bit of a question. The Mishnah describes the four different species of the five different species of grains. There's wheat, there's barley, there's oats, spelt, and rye. Now those are the mezonos ones. Now, we're usually used to translating those five in that way. There were some who questioned all those translations. There were some who threw a question into whether the species that Chazal was speaking about is actually the species that we call today oats. So there was such a question about that. Rashi says explicitly oats. Rashi actually gives the old French word for oats. Anyone know what the old French word for oats is? Anyone know what the Latin word for oats is? He said almost. Ovina. Ovina is the... And anyone knows what... What product?
Yeah, like
the
cream.
The cream, that's right. Very good, very good. Very good. Okay, Avena is made with oats because it has oatmeal in it. Okay, so I found this out in the following, that if somebody has chicken pox, so you're supposed to take in an oatmeal bath. That's what they say. Whether it works or not, I can't tell you. So one time I was sent to the store many, many years ago, before vaccines, I was sent to the store to go find some kind of oatmeal bath. And for one of our kids. And I'm walking around the pharmacy, looking around, all of a sudden I see something that's called Avena. And I said, that's Rashi M'sachem the Flamed. Hey, that's it. Rashi says Avena. And that, lo and behold, I looked at it and says, made that oatmeal. That is oatmeal, okay? So we follow the view of Rashi. Most of us follow. But there were some who made Hadamah on Cheerios and oatmeal and all that kind of stuff because they weren't so sure that it was. But again, most of us follow themselves. Granola is a very, very tricky situation because granola is made of grains that weren't processed in the normal way. they were, the Gemara speaks about if you have almost like whole grains that weren't really treated yet, they weren't processed yet, so there's a big question what the correct bracha that would be. So there was, for that reason, there are many who make hadamah on all the granola kinds of products. There are many who do that. Not everybody, some make mizonos on that. It's a very, very questionable bracha.
You don't eat granola bars?
Some people don't eat it.
Would I not eat a granola bar?
Because of that.
What would you tell your Talmud who asked?
Or your daughter.
Or your daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, those who make hadama on it, tefwa terloy, and those make mizonos on it.
Would you make both?
I would make both. One of them would be a bracha on it.
No, but I'm not you could sure. Also eat two foods before. It.
There you go.
They're saying any granola bar out there, Kind bars, whatever.
There are many who make Adama. There are many who say Adama.
Whoever, whatever they do, they make it for every brand.
Yeah,
of
yeah the more
bar.
Problematic issue with the granola bars is the bracha achrona on it. Because there are some who say you make a. Is it Tosfos quotes in the pigeon that says you make a bracha? Al Adama v'al pri Adama v'al. We never heard of that bracha. So that's a shaky bracha. That's a very questionable bracha. So those who would have to do a granola bar, that what to rely on.
But what should they make at the end?
Once they're eating it, then they have
to. Is it more like a rice? It's like a fake mizonos?
It's not. It's either real mizonos or it's hadamah.
And which is less of a lie, like we were saying?
But the average you would probably answer with either one. But the average would be answer with manufacturers also. But the average would be answer with manufacturers.
What about Pringles?
Pringles were an interesting thing. Pringles, I remember when Pringles first came out. When Pringles first came out in the early 70s, so the word of the street was, the brach is shahakol on Pringles, because they're not really a piece of potato. They're potato that's made up into first they break it down to powder, then they reconstitute it, so the brach goes down to shahakol. That was the old world. Then years later, somebody brought a Pringle to Rav Shlomo Zalman when they showed it to him, and he said, it was a potato chip. So he said, but Rebbe, but it was once potato flour. So he said something along the lines, well, it had a tchias amesim now. So it became a potato chip again. So Shlomo Zalman held up Pringles or Hadama. So there are those who make Hadama. I personally, I'm not a big fan of Pringles, but I like Pringles, but I don't need too many Pringles. But I think you make Hadama on Pringles. Okay, but there are some who still go the old-fashioned way, make shahakal. I think the more correct bracha is Hadama.
So why corn flour is different then?
No,
like
no,
people
no.
Say it's made from corn.
No. Only because the Pringles have been reconstituted to look like sliced potatoes.
Because of the look of it.
Right. It comes back to look like a potato, right? The idea is that when you break something up, so it's indistinguishable at that point, then it loses the bracha.
If you were having a potato with cheese on it, you're saying the potato is more important, you're saying the cheese is more important?
I think the cheese is probably coming to enhance the potato. I think so. It's probably how that
So one would... Okay, forget it.
I think so.
Everyone else could ask questions, I feel like.
I have a question. Yeah. Let's say you want granola, for example, but you wouldn't eat the granola. Like, you want to make it into a meal, so you put in yogurt.
Right.
But you wouldn't eat the yogurt without the granola. Your purpose is eating the granola. You just want to add it to something.
Like the parfait.
Or like,
so you mean your real goal is to eat the granola?
Yeah, like let's say a grilled chicken salad. Your purpose is you want chicken.
Right.
But like you want to make it something fancy, so you put
so you're throwing in, so if you're throwing in the salad to enhance the chicken, then you just make shahakal for it.
Even though there's only a few pieces of the chicken?
It's only a few pieces.
But if the whole goal of the salad is just to enable you to eat the chicken, so then it's a shakal.
So people have different brachas for the same dish depending on their goals.
Yeah. Wait, so what about her yogurt with
so the yogurt also, if the end would be whatever the bracha and granola is, Adamo and Mizonos, then right. Usually, let's say you have a yogurt and you throw some Oreo, the Oreo stuff or something in it. So then you have to make shahakal on the yogurt, but you still have to make mizonos on the cookies because mizonos can never be bottled to something else. So real bona fide mizonos can't be bottled to something else.
So if you have half milk and half cereal,
But milk is, the goal of the milk is to eat the cereal. No, if you wanted a cup of milk, you'd have a cup of milk. Your goal is to have cereal.
What about like a fruit smoothie with milk?
So you drink it, right? If you're drinking the charcoal, that's true, not charcoal.
What's going on with berries these days? Like, it used to be the rule was...
You know, the kosher or the...
No, strawberries used to be, that's how them, everything else is AIDS. But I've heard that that's not true anymore. The bushes or something.
No, the bushes have always been the same, just a different...
they understand it differently.
There's a minig. Some folks can have this idea that if it's in a very, very low bush, it's not really a tree, and therefore the bracha is adama. So in Europe, the blueberries used to grow on lower bushes. They're just different species of blueberries. The best of my knowledge, the American blueberries are still heights. In the early Apollo, look at the Mishnah Berurah says the bracha on blueberries is Adama, because in Poland, so the blueberries grew on lower bushes, that's all. So I think in America, the best of my knowledge, the heights.
They didn't have blueberries
flakir. The blueberries were very different. It's similar looking berry, but...
Was it different? It grew on... Did it grow?
Grass-like...
Oh, it grew on a lower... yes, that's
almost what... like strawberries.
Right, so that's what the Mishnah Berurah was describing. Right, right, good. Okay, thank you. Okay, right. Right, but the blueberries in America, I think, are trees. Like, are bushes, but they're close to trees.
There are these bars that are made out of nuts and dates and egg whites. Right.
What would you say? It's like a... Yeah, no. It's probably an eighth, because most of it is nuts and dates.
You can't tell that.
You can't see.
It looks like